Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, it's a Friday. How are you? We're fine. Thanks for asking. Live in Los Angeles, this is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we're on Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, and FS1. I said it 2 weeks ago. It's going to be my best Blazing Five of the year. I went 4-1. I stunk last week. I think I have the best Blazing Five I've had this year. Best Blazing Five this year in 1 hour. Joy Taylor is joining me. Joy, I've got a lot of energy.
You are fired up today.
I am fired up today for a lot of reasons, but how are things?
Everything is great. No complaints. Life is good.
So as a parent, there's a saying. I want you to think about this. If you're not a parent, you may be. But as a parent, there is a saying. The days are long when you have kids, but the years fly by. What does that mean? When you got a bunch of kids, there's a lot of chaos. It's hard to raise kids. The days, what time is it? Can I have a cocktail yet? Oh, my God. But then you look up and they're in college. And then they have their own kids. The days are long, but the years fly by. In the NFL, the games and the outcomes are surprising. But the seasons are always kind of predictable. Last night, the Colts dominate Tennessee. And I thought, wow, that caught me off guard. And then I went and looked back at my preseason predictions. No, I had the Colts winning the division. And I had Phillip Rivers having a very good year. And he had a very good night. So it seems like, whoa, what is going on? But we knew the Colts had the best young offensive line in the NFL. We knew Phillip Rivers with the Chargers was always productive. We knew this would be Phillip Rivers' best offensive line. And we knew we love Chris Ballard, and the Colts are loaded on defense. They're loaded. They haven't whiffed on any of their draft picks of note. And then you watch it, and you're like, that's surprising. In fact, 5 of the 8 divisions I've got right, even the ones I don't. Is it a shock that Green Bay leads their division? I had them in the playoffs. Is it a shock that Pittsburgh is good? Well, they're the Steelers, right? Like, I didn't like them as much as everybody else. There's very little. If you look at the standings today, Buffalo leads their division. All right, Joy and I predicted that. Pittsburgh, Baltimore in the playoffs. They've been the best two-run organizations in that division forever. Colts, Titans, that's who I had in first and second. Kansas City winning their division, you all predicted that, so did I. I picked the Eagles to win their division, that's where they're at. I had the Packers second, they're first, not a shock. We all had the Saints and the Buccaneers 1 and 2. I did, Joy did, we all did, that's where it's at. And oh, by the way, the Seahawks lead the NFC West. We kind of liked all the teams. Nobody's shocked that Russell Wilson leads the division. The games are surprising, but the seasons are kind of predictable. But here's what's interesting with these two teams, the Colts. They are the Kansas City Chiefs. But that Midwestern team in conservative Kansas City went for it a few years ago. Kansas City was the Colts. Andy Reid, good GM, stable, longtime owner. Roster was really good. They were a playoff team. But they were in NFL quarterback quicksand. They had to go for it. They were too good to get a top 10 pick. So they had to move up and roll the dice and take a chance on Patrick Mahomes because they were too good to get one of the 2 or 3 top-rated quarterbacks, right? That's NFL quarterback quicksand. And their quarterback, like Phillip Rivers, Alex Smith, was good enough to get you to the playoffs, but you're not going to win a Super Bowl. So the Colts have a decision to make like another Midwestern team, and Chris Ballard is not a huge risk-taker. It's time to roll the dice, fellas. I know you're in the Midwest. It's very conservative, one of our most conservative states. So is, you know, Kansas City, Missouri, very conservative state. It's time to be progressive. It's time to roll the dice. Kansas City did, paid off. Do you want to be the Minnesota Vikings? You want to be the Minnesota Vikings where you win 10 games, 11 games, you make the playoffs, you can win a playoff game, but you're too good. You're drafting somewhere between 21 and 29, and you can never quite get the quarterback you want. So you get Kirk Cousins, and you keep winning, and they'll probably end up, Minnesota's hot right now, they'll probably make the playoffs, and you're not going anywhere. What do you want to be? What do you want to be? The Colts are the Chiefs. They're going to make the playoffs. They have a really good roster, a lot of good young players, very dynamic at certain spots, but a ceiling at quarterback. Not a bad quarterback. A quarterback like last night, 29 of 39, 300 yards, 105 quarterback rating. But they got Quentin Nelson, the best offensive lineman in the game, young guy. They got Darius Leonard. How about Pittman, the USC wide receiver, looks good. Jonathan Taylor. Boy, they got a pass rush. What do you want to be? You want to be the Chiefs? Then work against your conservative personalities and go for it. Not a political statement. It's a personality statement. Go for it. Or you're going to be the Vikings. Respected, well-liked, win games, get to the playoffs. But nobody really takes you serious in the Super Bowl conversation. I think the Colts are that good. I think they're a go-for-it move at quarterback away, moving up from being Kansas City. I really do. So Tiger Woods had a great first round at the Masters. I root for Tiger now. I'm not going to lie. You know, it is funny. We're living in an era. We just want to bury the old guys. Nick Saban, get rid of him. He still rules college football. LeBron James just won a title. The number one seed in the AFC is Big Ben. The number one seed in the NFC is Drew Brees. And Tom Brady's still good. Oh, by the way, Tiger's in contention at the Masters. Think about this. In 2007, LeBron was in the finals, Brady in the Super Bowl, and Tiger won a major. 13 years later, LeBron won a championship, Tom Brady's still crushing, and Tiger's at the Masters in contention. I know old school isn't cool. I get it. But we should probably slow down on burying the old. By the way, the Democrats for 4 years paraded out a dozen candidates to beat Trump. They settled on 78-year-old Joe Biden. Who did? Again, not a political statement. That's facts. The reality is the Beatles and Queen were two of the top 10 selling albums. Elton John was near the top 10. And oh, by the way, Metallica and the Rolling Stones, when they're allowed to tour, fill arenas. Tiger Woods, how many golfers was I told were going to be Tiger Woods? How many golfers? Jordan Spieth. Oh, it's going to be Tiger. Tiger, can he make the cut? He was Tiger for a year. Brooks Koepka, he's got four majors. Tiger's got four times that. Rory McIlroy, Sergio, he won one major recently when he was old. You keep telling me, oh, it's the young musician, the young golfer, the young artist. How many NBA players is the NBA going to try to make the next LeBron? One-dimensional James Harden, isn't it? Quirky personalities like Kawhi Leonard and Westbrook, they're not it. Talented but can't win a number of playoff series. Giannis isn't it. LeBron's still it. Oh, I love this new extra. She's the next Meryl Streep. No. The next Meryl Streep is Meryl Streep. She just got nominated again in 2018. There is no more Meryl Streeps. One on the planet. Great early, great mid-age, great now, great 2 years ago. Still will get nominated again in her career. You're trying to give me the next Jordan Spieth and James Harden and the new quarterbacks. I got news for you. Mahomes is amazing. He'll never be Brady. He's not going to 8 Super Bowls. Andy Reid's not going to be around that long. They may hire the next coach and he may be a bum. The Beatles, Queen, Metallica, no Meryl Streep. She's the next Meryl Streep. I love that Tiger once again is in contention. I saw somebody yesterday. Can he do it for 4 days? I don't know. Give me 3.5. I'll be happy. He won it a couple years ago. But I think it's just deliciously ironic that Jordan Spieth was going to be the next Tiger. He's not as good as the old beat-up Tiger. We want to bury people. And I got news for you. Experience and wisdom, sage knowledge in these big moments. It's there's a lot of things you can get when you're young. What you can't get when you're young is experience and wisdom. You just can't. You can go to Harvard. You can go to Princeton. You can travel the world. Wisdom comes with age. And I love that Saban and Big Ben and Drew Brees and Tom Brady and LeBron and Meryl Streep and Queen and Elton John and Metallica and the Rolling Stones. Either the king or really close to it.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
In the summer, when we were all locked in our houses, we were making predictions, Joy, and I said that the Ravens are going to go 16-0.
Yes.
And there's a legendary place in Baltimore called Jimmy's Seafood. They do a really good job. It's all over the internet. And so they sent me this package. They're like, hey, we thanks for loving the Ravens. And I was like, oh, that's so kind. Well, the food, it's amazing. I grew up on the beach, crab country in Washington State. So I devoured it for every meal for about 4 days. So the last 2 weeks I've been defending Lamar Jackson. And they just texted me, you want some more seafood? And I'm like, okay, at this point, I'm not sure if I like Lamar or the seafood. I think I, if I get free crab, I may just vote Lamar MVP. I mean, not that I don't like him, but
it's not a bad strategy.
I just want a full disclosure. I love Lamar, but seafood's got a way of changing my opinion. I want to say this. I love Carson Wentz. And I've said this over and over, and I defend him. And, you know, I kind of pick a side with quarterbacks. I think it's better as a talk show host to pick a side. You know, I'm not a Baker guy. I'm a Darnold guy. Maybe I'll be wrong. But Carson Wentz I really like. But I have to be honest, I like Garoppolo too. And then he got hurt again and again and again, and I'm out. I'm not going to be stubborn and rigid. Like, Garoppolo's not good enough to get hurt all the time. Aaron Rodgers is. Or Carson Wentz to me is. But there's a criticism about Carson Wentz here by an executive in the NFL. This is The Athletic. This is an offensive coordinator, my bad, in the NFL. He said, listen, Wentz needs to hit rock bottom because right now he doesn't know when to say when. Everything he's doing is trying to extend the play. Like, it's the last play of every game. They have all these coaches and analytic guys in Philadelphia, but there isn't anybody holding him accountable. He plays like the last play. Every play is the last play of the game. It is a totally just criticism. It is the knock on him I can't defend. But this quote implies that you could change Carson Wentz. And I want to throw this out. As a parent, this is something you talk about a lot as parents. What is innate and genetic with our kids, and what can you change? I send my kids to therapy. I don't think I'm changing them. My son's impatient. My daughter's more patient. My daughter's more social. My son's less social. It's who they are genetically. My son's more like me. My daughter's more like her mom. Okay. I don't know if you can change reckless. Phil Mickelson has golfed the same way from 20 to 50. It's who he is. Brett Favre, first year in the league last year, last pass in Minnesota. It's who he is. Russell Westbrook, he's been coached by great coaches. This is how he plays. I love Sam Darnold, but he was a linebacker in high school. He's still reckless. That was the knock on him in high school. He's reckless. It was the knock at USC. It's hero ball. It's the knock in the NFL. He's had seven different coaches. They can't coach it out of him. There are things we know due to studies, your IQ can be raised over your life. You read more, you travel more. Your IQ can be elevated. You don't have to be somebody that would ace Jeopardy, but you can get smarter over a lifetime. We know you can change your body, your shape with your diet and exercise. But I've never met anybody in my life who was reckless at 24 and cautious at 34. It's like innate. It's like either you're social, my daughter's social, or you're less social, like my son. They can both, you know, he can be social, but he's not a social animal. My daughter is. She's never going to be a recluse. He's never going to be the life of the party. This is who they are. I'm not going to try and change them. I think what makes Darnold and what makes Wentz special is they can make plays almost nobody can. Mahomes is also at times really a gambler. But unlike Favre, he doesn't throw interceptions. That's what the legends do. They give you all the upside and not much of the downside. This quote by the offensive coordinator implies you can change Carson Wentz by just tutoring him. No, you can make him better at the line of scrimmage. If you didn't like his delivery, you could change it a little bit, but Phillip Rivers still throws like Phillip Rivers throws. There are things Russell Wilson and Kyler Murray are getting better at. But when you got the reckless DNA, Favre is Favre, Mickelson's Mickelson, Westbrook's Westbrook, Wentz is Wentz. To me, it's kind of innate. It's who you are, and I don't think it can be coached out of you. Nobody goes from daring to cautious. In life, in any business. I've never seen it. Maybe it's there. I've never seen it.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
I was saying this. LeBron James is great. But I don't feel he's as loved as Michael Jordan was. And I don't feel he is as loved as Tiger is today. And I don't, and I think he's more polarizing. And people say it's politics. Oh, give me a break. We've liked a lot of people that talk. Muhammad Ali was the biggest, most popular athlete perhaps in my life, and he's the most political athlete of my life. I don't buy all that stuff. I think the what Michael Jordan and Tiger Woods, it's Masters Week, Tiger played very well yesterday, have in common is at the end of their careers, they became closer to us. They became relatable. Michael Jordan, dad gets murdered. He goes and tries baseball, and he stinks mostly. He comes back, and he's got teammate issues. His first year back, he didn't win. And then we watched him struggle. And then Michael was great, and you say, oh, how could I relate to him? But he was never relatable. Do you realize he had two three-peats? The second three-peat for Michael Jordan got much higher ratings than the first. Did you know that? And that's playing the Utah Jazz. It got higher ratings than when he played against Magic or Charles Barkley. Because we could relate to Michael. The fever. His father. The baseball struggles. He quit trying. Look at Tiger Woods. If you look at Tiger Woods, we were in awe of him, but we didn't necessarily all root for him. And then he goes through a divorce. He's very much like the rest of us over 50. His back hurts a lot. His hair is receding. He has really bad days on the golf course. He probably swears too much when he hits a bad 2-iron. You know, and he's divorced. And doesn't probably get to see his kids every weekend like he wants to. Like, that's very relatable. Michael and Tiger, as they went through kind of common everyday struggles, at the end, Michael's highest rated NBA final was not against Magic. It wasn't. It wasn't against Sean Kemp and Gary Payton. It wasn't against it was against the Utah Jazz. Because by then we knew Michael. We knew that his life wasn't perfect. We knew he couldn't hit a curveball. We watched him struggle in the minor leagues. We watched him hit 200. We saw the massive. We saw him bury his father. We saw the frustrations he had with Rodman and Jerry Krause. That he just wanted. He wanted to play again, and he had to quit. We really liked Michael at the end. We were really rooting for Michael. And I find myself today rooting for Tiger Woods. When I watched him at first, I loved him. But I was just in awe of him. I was in awe. But at the end, I can remember watching the Utah series. And it was hard not to root for Michael. And right now, this weekend, it's almost impossible not to root for Tiger Woods. I get people that don't root for LeBron. He feels, frankly, not that relatable. I mean, he got kind of injured for half a year. But if you go back and look at the highest rated LeBron finals, do you know which one it is? It's not those glamorous teams in Miami. No. No, it's not. It's Cleveland. He broke the city's heart. He wanted to make amends. Nothing in Cleveland is ever easy. Even the summer's humid, nothing easy. He was the underdog. They trailed in the series. The ultimate struggle. We all dumped on him. He's down. It's over. He was facing a dynasty. That was when you could really relate to LeBron. He's in Cleveland. It wasn't a perfect team. His teammate, he didn't have the superstar coach. He didn't have D-Wade and Bosch. It wasn't a glamorous team. It wasn't aqua water. It was Cleveland, and it was facing a dynasty. And they got down 3-1, and he was going to lose again. It's like, oh, okay, I can relate to that. And so there is something, you know, I guess my point is, if you're I think the guy that just won the presidency, he lost his family. Joe Biden has had massive personal loss. Like incredible, sad, personal, life-altering loss. I think that's incredibly relatable to people. And I think it is with Tiger Woods. I can remember I was a sportscaster in Portland, Oregon. And Tiger was winning juniors. I think he won one of his juniors in Beaverton, Oregon. And there was a lot of resentment. And people felt it was always racial, but maybe some of it was. Some of it was generational. Like, why are we showing the 18-year-old instead of the old golfers that have been on the tour forever? I want to see Greg Norman. I want to see Faldo or whoever. And I would go golf at public courses, and people would say, you sportscasters only talk about Tiger. And it was like, there's so many great golfers out there. Why are you talking about golf? And I'm like, I got it. It was generational. It was like, golf is a gentleman's sport. Let's not just bury all the, you know, let's not stop talking old guys. But it's almost impossible to find people today. I mean, if you go back to Tiger Woods' last win at the Masters, I mean, you look at that gallery. I mean, there wasn't a person there in Augusta, Georgia that was not rooting for Tiger Woods, because we've seen him struggle. And the receding hairline and the back pain and the divorce and, you know, it's over and the multiple surgeries. And I think it makes him incredibly relatable. And I'm rooting for him this weekend. I can like Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka. I can like him, but they're young. They'll have their day. For Tiger, this could be one of his last chances at a major. Who knows?
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
One of the things I appreciate. So it used to be when I did this, and Joy to a lesser degree, but some of it, the media was rougher years ago. The media was older years ago. But big corporations that own the media, they don't want to pay the older people. So the media's gotten younger in my lifetime. It's a much younger media. It's a much cheaper media. And it's a different media. There are more people in the media that root for teams. Like, when I got into this business, like, you didn't root. Like, you were a hack. You were if you weren't cynical, you weren't respected. And that, to this day, I'm probably a little more harsh than the rest of the American media. That's the generation I grew up in. When I was in Portland, I ripped the Blazers. When I was in Tampa, I was all over the Bucks. When I was in Vegas, I got death threats for ripping Tark. And I took that as a badge of honor. The media today tends to be friendlier. So I always appreciate when the media is tough on people. Tom Curran, I bring him on the show. He was all over Bill Belichick at a press conference. I could play 5 minutes of it. He got right after Bill Belichick. He said, your drafts in the last 4 years are bad. And he tried to kind of make it land more gently. But here was one of the questions Tom Curran asked. By the way, this is not easy to do. You're questioning the greatest football coach ever, and Belichick has the patience of somebody who doesn't have patience. Here it is.
A lot of the players have been brought in via the draft since 2017, haven't won those competitions or gained your faith and confidence. I know how much you put into the draft, and I know how much every team puts into the draft. I guess there's a disconnect between whether it's injuries, development, competition. So not asking a question on it and continuing to write or spitball about it doesn't do us any good if we don't ask the guy who is in charge of it.
Yeah. Well, Tom, I'd say the most important thing to me is winning games, and I'm not going to apologize for our record over the last 20 years. I mean, I've seen a lot worse. So ultimately, we try to put the best team on the field that we can to be competitive, and I don't really see that changing.
Now, it should be noted, as Bill has won more, he has pushed back on advice on the draft. And it's not that Belichick was always a poor drafter, and they still do a pretty good job on the offensive line, but they don't have dynamic players. And as Bill has won more Super Bowls, when Tom beat Atlanta, Tom started doing more commercials. And when Bill beat Atlanta, Bill stopped listening to anybody in that personnel department. If you go to their last three drafts, they got one guy who's hit. He's a right tackle out of Michigan. He was a guard. They've used him at tackle. Michael Onwenu, he's a very good player. He's been terrific for them. Outside of that, it is a bunch of guys, even their first picks. N'Keal Harry, Jawan Williams, the corner from Vandy, Isaiah Wynn, Duke Dawson, Sony Michel. These guys just aren't, they're just dudes. And those are like first-round picks. So, I think some of it is very human. It's arrogance. This is what happens to Bobby Knight, and it's what happens to, you know, Greg Popovich. When you start thinking the system wins games. No, the players. Players win games. Belichick's won 43% of his games without Brady. Players win games. Pete Carroll fired twice. 7-9, 7-9 pre-Russell Wilson. Greg Popovich. No, Greg, it's not you. It was Tim Duncan. Now, your system's valuable. It elevated Tim Duncan, but you won because of Tim Duncan. The older Tim Duncan got, and the less dominant Tim Duncan got, the less Greg Popovich won, and now his teams aren't any good. So, you know, this is, you know, it's, listen, I know companies like to believe it's all about strategy. No, it's not. You can have all these executives in the world. The Ringer sold for a bunch of money because people like to listen to Bill Simmons' podcast. That's it. There's no strategy. They screwed everything else up, but that was good. I mean, seriously, Bill's popular. He gets 2 million people to listen every Monday to his podcast. That's why they make, you know, it's an hour and a half long. They make $1 million every week on it. That's why it works. It's not strategy. It's this didn't work, that didn't work. His TV show didn't work. Doesn't matter. The Monday podcast works because people like it. Barstool Sports, they made a bunch of mistakes. People like Big Cat and Portnoy. And they listen to their podcast. They've made a bunch of mistakes. They did a TV show, it lasted one episode. They made a bunch of mistakes. They've said things they shouldn't have said. Strategy, nonsense. Players. Got to have Brady Mahomes. Andy Reid won a bunch of games. Got Patrick Mahomes. Now wins all of them. This is the way it goes. So Belichick, and you know, you can push back and all this stuff. Last four drafts, you got no players. How you doing this year? Because Buffalo's got better players, and Miami now is about one more draft from way more good players. I mean, strategy is a bunch of bunk. Strategy only works when you got great players. The rest of it's nonsense. Pete Carroll's strategy's never worked anywhere. He went to USC, it worked. He got Russell Wilson, it worked. It didn't work the other NFL places. Belichick's strategy didn't work early days in New England. It didn't work in Cleveland. Strategy is overrated. You know why our World Series is so great? Because Joe Buck and John Smoltz, those dudes know baseball. And you put them on and they talk baseball, you're like, oh, those meetings for years about the World Series. It wouldn't sound as good without Joe Buck and John Smoltz. I'm not saying the camera people and the producers and the strategy and the executives. It's not a shot at anybody. But, you know, there's very little great. And when you get great, it cuts through and it makes all the strategy work. That's my takeaway. So Belichick's strategy is a bunch of nonsense. He's a good coach. Watch him play. They can't score any points. They got Cam that can't move the ball. They're gonna get probably boat raced by Baltimore this weekend. Why? Baltimore's got more good players. Suddenly, John Harbaugh was going to get fired 2 years ago. John Harbaugh was going to get fired. He drafts Lamar Jackson. He got an extension. Oh, strategy. This is funny. It's funny how Joe Flacco got worse and John Harbaugh's strategy got worse. It's just crazy how it works. And last year, the Steelers didn't have Big Ben. All their strategy didn't work. They had a guy named Duck Hodges quarterback, and the strategy wasn't very good. Oh, Big Ben came back. They're 8-0. Strategy's all brilliant now. I'm not taking shots at him. I'm just saying this is all nonsense. The strategy stuff. Get stars. By the way, Kobe without a big man, and he couldn't get out of the first round. He had Shaq and Gasol, he won titles. Was Phil Jackson suddenly, no, Phil, when Phil Jackson had players, Phil Jackson won title. I saw Phil Jackson get swept by the Dallas Mavericks once in a playoff series. Why? And they didn't have Kobe and Shaq together. And that's the way it works. The strategy in Los Angeles wasn't as good when Magic Johnson got old. Suddenly the strategy wasn't as good because Magic wasn't as good. And by the way, the Pistons were great forever. Was Chuck Daly the great strategist? By the end, when they got old and beat up, the strategy didn't work. I mean, they were still good. So, you know, they don't draft very well. That's why they're not winning games. They're not very dynamic. It's why Tom Brady left. They don't have enough good players. I'm nothing against I like coaches. But all that strategy stuff works when you have the star to burst through, the Mahomes, the Tim Duncan, the Kobes. That's when it works. Then otherwise, you're 7-9, but a genius and respected among coaching circles. That and $3 get you coffee at Starbucks.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
He's the co-host on Speak for Yourself with Marcellus Wiley, who also writes books. His is already a bestseller. It hasn't been released yet, but I know because he told me how many he sold, so it's guaranteed to be a bestseller. His name is Emmanuel Acho. Three NFL seasons. Brother played as well. He was a first-team All-Big 12 linebacker at Texas. The book is Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man, Emmanuel Acho. And so I watched your conversations with Roger Goodell and Matthew McConaughey, and we were saying something during the break. I think John Lewis, the late John Lewis, said this. It's a great line, and I've thought about this before. In life, it's not what you say, it's how it's heard.
Exactly.
And so when I watched your conversations, it wasn't what you always said, but as a white 55-year-old guy, it was how it landed for me. You weren't judgmental. I don't know if you wanted it to land that way, but I thought, oh, this stuff lands right. He's not preaching. He's not lecturing. He's telling me, hey, man, this is the way. And so that my first thing is a compliment into you have a way of making stuff land that is uncomfortable, yet I was never uncomfortable listening to it. That was the irony. I was like, oh, this is really I'm a curious guy. So when you wrote the book, did you think you'd get it? It's been wholly embraced.
Yeah.
Did you think you'd get pushback?
You're always cognizant of potentially getting pushback, and that's why I'm very cognizant of every word I say and putting the right emphasis on the right syllable, right? Because you have to know exactly what you're saying and how you're saying it. You've said, and this is the second time I've heard it, Oprah actually, Colin, was the first person to say it, saying that I have a way of delivering hard information, but it doesn't come off as hard.
Softly.
I don't really know how I'm doing what I'm doing. I'm just trying to deliver truth with grace and with love, because I think that's what we need more of in this world, is hard truths, but they have to be embodied and packaged with grace. Otherwise, they're too harsh for somebody to receive.
You've used the line, guilt doesn't cause somebody to change. Love does. So being, you know, I tell my liberal friends this. Your messaging's bad. You're being condescending. You can get along with conservatives. Don't always tell us how smart you are. So in your book, you never come across as preachy. It's like, listen, I'm going to tell you my life experience. And I want to talk about Oprah, because people often ask me in my life, who's your role model? And I've said, Oprah. And they're like, not sports guys. I'm like, no, Howard Stern and Oprah own their own brands. That's the goal.
Yeah.
To control it. Is Oprah obviously smart? But when after talking to Oprah, what's your takeaway on her vision and her?
It's funny because we did a Zoom call for an hour, maybe it was 2 days ago. And the thing that sticks out with me most is the first question she asked me. I hop on a FaceTime after the first episode I did, Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man. It gets 25 million views in 4 days. And I get a call from Oprah's assistant. She says, hey, Oprah wants to talk to you. The first question Oprah asked me, Colin, what is your intention? She said, what's your intention? Because your intention, it guides your direction.
Right.
And so when she asked me what my intention was, I said, my intention is to change the world, be a bridge for racial reconciliation, and I think I can do that. The biggest thing when I talk to Oprah, which guides my direction of all my conversations, is, Emmanuel, what's your intention? And stay true to your intention. Don't worry about clicks. Don't worry about likes. Don't worry about follows. Don't worry about shares. Stay true to your intention and stay true to the messaging. I think that's what she does best.
Yes.
And that's what I borrow most from her.
Are you hopeful?
That's a great question. Colin, I got an email from a 70-year-old woman named Lynn. It was after the first episode of Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man. She's a white woman, grew up in rural Alabama in the 1940s or 50s. She said, Emmanuel, I grew up, I didn't go to school with any quote-unquote Negroes. I grew up in rural Alabama, and I was very prejudiced, she says, in so many words. She said, but after watching your episode, I realized I can still change. Please don't give up on me yet. I love you, my son and my brother.
Wow.
Almost brought tears to my eyes, but it's nearly impossible not to be hopeful when you see something like that. What I realized, Colin, is there's great intentions. Black people and white people, we want to get along, but there's a fracture on how. There's a communication barrier, Colin. There's a communication color and culture disconnect.
Yeah.
And that's the real problem at hand.
Culture's fascinating because when I was growing up, there wasn't a black middle class. I think Bill Clinton's presidency was the first time I remember reading about a black middle class, because of some legislative changes. Mm-hmm. And yet your life, from what I've read, you probably feel fortunate. I feel I went through 8 divorces as a kid, but I feel fortunate, right? Because I had a loving mother and a smart father. I want to talk about culturally.
Yeah.
Are we this dissimilar? You want to be loved and loved. You want to be successful. You want to realize your dreams. How dissimilar are we? You and me, black and white, are we really that dissimilar? There are cultural realizations, right?
I would say it like this. If you were to walk into the grocery store and you were to walk down the produce aisle, you would see a bunch of fruits. And they are all fruit. So they have that in common, but they have different shapes, different sizes, different tastes, different textures. And so while at our core, we all have our humanity in common.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yes.
I understand the difference between being white and black. I want to state that. I get that. But at our core.
At our core, we're the same. But if the core is expressed differently, then we can never get to the core. You know what I mean? Like, Colin, that's part of the problem, is if we can never get to the core because of the exterior, the psychological differences, then we'll never get to the shared humanity.
So when I ask that, I sound like a stupid old guy when I say, what are our differences? What I'm talking about is today, 2020, November, what is the day? 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th. I've always had this theory, is that people, and we know the country's past,
mm-hmm.
but mostly Joy and I root for the same thing. We laugh at the same thing. We cry at the same stuff. And I think sometimes we do such a poor job, our media does a poor job, our politicians, that we're so powerful when we're unified.
Absolutely.
And we're so rarely unified.
Yeah.
It's frustrating to me. Politics makes me angry. I don't like being angry. I think you get more, I see it, and it's just not a Trump thing. It's just a political thing, is that I get off my phone sometimes. I am angry at our public figures using our divisiveness, mm-hmm. because we see it. Does it frustrate you?
It does, but this is a sports show, so let's talk sports. Why aren't we unified? In a locker room, people have different races. People have different religions. People have different orientations, but they're all unified, Colin, because they have the same common enemy. Therefore, they have the same common goal. Dallas Cowboys, common enemy. Philadelphia Eagles, let's go out there and win that game. The problem in our society, Colin, is we don't all have the same common enemy. See, people think that it's black versus white. It's man versus woman, when it's really oppressed versus oppressor. It's really hate versus evil. It's really good versus evil, love versus hate. So when I think about the cause, when I think about the effect, Colin, I'm really looking at the cause. And what's the cause is we're not on the same page of what the common enemy is. So rather than you and I working together to defeat the enemy, you and I are bickering. And we can't defeat the enemy if we're bickering inside the locker room.
Yeah. I know this is heady stuff and it's not real sportsy, but it's the stuff in this book that fascinates me. It's why I'm going to read it when I fly to Vegas today.
This is Vegas.
Listen, I talk sports all day. I don't get smart people that don't want to talk sports. Like, so when I get somebody, this is what it. All the questions I was supposed to ask you at the end, I just moved up. Because that's all the stuff. That's all the stuff that interests me. Nothing against the Colts Titans. Okay, we can talk about that all day long.
It was kind of boring.
I don't get your time because we're both busy, right?
Yep.
And COVID, we can't be around each other. So this is all the stuff that interests me. This is the stuff Joy and I talk about in the makeup room. We never talk sports. We talk about life and stuff, and this stuff to me is.
Well, here's what I'll
say. I think your book makes me think about race, and I don't get defensive, and mm-hmm. I don't get angry, and I don't think many people deliver it like you, and that's why I think it's so important. I think it's so important your message is obviously important, but the way you deliver it is very unique, and that's why I like you and I like your stuff. Because you're striving for that. I don't want to sound like Oprah, but that's what you're striving for. A lot of people aren't honesty brokers in that space.
Yeah.
That's all I'll say.
Colin, my freshman year at the University of Texas, I'm coming from a private school, predominantly white. So the players I was playing with were undersized. I was typically the biggest. Now I'm going to the University of Texas. Had defensive coordinator at the time, Colin, Will Muschamp. Current head coach of South Carolina. He's known for punching a board so hard that the rebound of his fist cut his face in half. Like, that's Will Muschamp. And he said this the first day. He said, Acho, he said, listen to the message, not the tone. I was like, what's that even mean? He was so just verbally crazy that I had to try to pick apart what he was saying because the tone was too harsh. And I realized, that didn't necessarily work for me because some people can't just listen to the message and not the tone. So rather than making the reader do more work, Colin, I said, let me try to package the message in a softer tone as well. And that's what I did in Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man. And that's what I did in the book along with the show, because the people are at the table, Colin, ready to be delivered a meal. I just happen to be delivering the meal. I happen to be the chef of this, one of the chefs towards racial reconciliation, not the only.
By the way, when you first did this, the genesis of this, the day, the moment, the epiphany, when you're like, okay, I'm going to do it and I'm going to call it this. Where were you? What was the drive? You wake up, you dream about it. Like, where did this all start?
That is a question. After the murder of George Floyd, I said, man, I have to do something. I said, I'm a sports analyst. But before I'm a sports analyst, Colin, I'm a Black man. But before the world even saw me as a Black man, I'm a human being. So it's my job to positively contribute to society, leave the world better than when I got here. Colin, I originally was going to call it Questions White People Have. True story. I was going to call it Questions White People Have. I was going to get three Black people at a table, three white people at a table. We'll sit at this round table, Colin. The white people will reach into the fishbowl, pull out a question. They will ask it. The Black people will answer. But we're in the middle of COVID, so I couldn't get anybody together. And so I said, I got to change this up. I said, timing is of the essence. You know that at sports. Everything is of the essence. I said, okay, I'll change the name to Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man. I'll do it myself. The first episode, I was supposed to do it with a friend. She had a change of heart. So I was never supposed to do the first episode by myself. First episode, Colin, I'm in an all-white room staring into the lens of a camera. It was supposed to be Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man, not Uncomfortable Monologue with a Black Man. So why am I sitting there by myself? I never wanted to be. And that's just how it came. I say there's a difference between your career and your calling. Career is what you're paid for. Calling is what you're made for. This, I found out, is my calling. It called me. I just happened to pick up.
That's really well said. I'm not really interested in the sports questions. And I say that respectfully. Are you worried about Brady and the Bucks? Oh, who the hell cares? I mean, seriously, I can talk about that stuff with everybody else. I'm not really interested in that. Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man, Emmanuel Acho, is... By the way, I like that you didn't judge me, because Twitter will.
Yeah.
I haven't been on it, but that you didn't judge me, you didn't even look at me harshly when I said, how dissimilar are you? Because if you said that on Twitter, I would be ravaged, but you didn't judge me when I said, you know, how dissimilar are we? The initial take, like a minute later, I'm not smart enough to get it in real time. A minute later, I'm like, oh, that sounded stupid. But you didn't judge me on that.
Colin, the problem in our society, I would say one of the top three biggest problems, I'll probably put it at third, cancel culture. When somebody says something, we're so ready to cancel them that we don't give them the room or the opportunity to grow. What does that do? Not only does it not allow the person the opportunity to grow, but it makes them fearful or more timid the next time.
That we talked about this with Drew Brees. Drew Brees had earned the right to what's viewed by many as a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
He'd given to charity. He'd been a wonderful teammate. Gerald McCoy came on the show, and he's like, I faced him in Tampa. He was my mentor. To me, he had earned the right to make, in the eyes of his clubhouse or his locker room, a mistake. And the cancel culture, which, by the way, I think it's a little overstated. I think it's been here forever. People have been trying to cancel me for 30 years. So this idea that, like, in the 70s and 80s, I had opinions and everybody liked me. But I do think social media has amplified the force in which it's delivered and the urgency in which it's delivered.
Absolutely.
It's an avalanche.
Yeah. And that is why I think so many people are afraid to say something about anything, because they don't want to be canceled. Colin, growing up, I used to play the game Minesweeper. Remember on your computer, it's right under Solitaire, like right under Hearts. I never knew how to play it, but I was bored on an airplane, so I would play Minesweeper. Colin, the objective of the game is to just kind of keep clicking around and hopefully you don't land on a mine.
Yeah.
And that's what I think we do in society now, is like we're so fearful of landing on a mine with every word that we say that we don't even bother playing the game, except it's not really a game. It's something called life. And because people are so often afraid of clicking a verbal mine and saying the wrong thing, it's I'm just not going to say anything at all.
No, this is something very real. This is why 22% of America is on Twitter and 78's not.
Yeah.
It's not because they're not interested, but or they sign up and they don't talk on it, because this is the world we live
in. And that, Colin, is why I wrote the book, because I wanted to preemptively answer questions that people don't want to ask because they don't want to get canceled. An ounce of prevention is better than a pound of cure. So let me try to preemptively and proactively answer questions for people who want them, who want to ask them, but might be a little bit afraid to.
This is great. You know, sports is okay. This is way better. So the book is Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man, Emmanuel Acho. There's a great picture on the back. You know how some people just look good in a suit? I mean, seriously. Right. Honestly. Some guys look great.
It's actually the Fox billboard picture.
Is it really?
Shout out to Fox. Yeah.
You didn't even pay for the suit. That's even better. Free suit is better than...
Whatever, Colin.
Hey, congrats on your success.
Thank you, my friend.
Thank you so much for taking time for us.
Pleasure's mine.